Welcome to the Underground, the Steel City Underground, the black and gold standard for Pittsburgh Steelers coverage. Now, here's your host, Joe Kuzma and Christina Rivers.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Steel City Underground podcast. My name's Joe Kuzma, and joining me today, the wonderful managing editor who is largely responsible for all of the stuff I don't write over on the steelcityunderground.com. Although, you know what? Sometimes you've been known to correct my grammar as well. I won Christina Tina Rivers. How you doing there, Tina?
Well, I've had an interesting couple weeks, but I'm back on my feet. So thanks for having me on.
Yeah, we mentioned you on a recent podcast about all of your trials and tribulations living out in basically, would you call it rural Iowa? Is that fair to say?
Yeah, it's about 25 miles outside of downtown Des Moines, but it's like once you get to a certain point on Interstate 80 going either direction outside the Des Moines metro area, that's all it is farmland and small towns. And so, yes, rural.
Well, you're in Tornado Alley, basically, and you get hammered with certain storms. And when something goes out, I mean, it goes out and you've got quite the wait to get some things fixed or cleared and everything else. So, well, it's good to have you here and speaking with not only me, but the listeners. And, you know, it's been the struggle not only to try and find out where the heck Brian's been, but also find some things to talk about. But, you know, the last couple of weeks, I know we've had some hit or miss with the 2-a-week thing. We'll be back on that regular schedule next week, and I promise for anyone who's been really clamoring for some Steelers content and some news and some other stuff, we got a couple big irons in the fire for starting next week as we kind of come around the home stretch for the regular season, just a couple weeks away now, where there's going to be no one in the stands on Monday Night Football. But that's I guess that's the way we're going to have to look at it on September 14th. However, you know, today, before we start getting down to roster cuts and stuff, we still got some training camp things going on. I think the one I'm going to throw out there real quick is before we talk about some of the maybe the hopefuls, because we started talking about this the other day in the back rooms, and we kind of discovered we happened upon something. But before that, Tina, Ben Roethlisberger everybody's talking about how great Ben looks, how great he's throwing the ball. And then we actually hear from Ben himself, and Ben says that it's pretty much anything he says is the best that he's been throwing even before the surgery. So he feels better than pre-surgery. And he's saying this has been nagging him. And now he just didn't say like last year, a few years. He pretty much has said like 14 years. I mean, that's like his entire time in the league has been. But we know Ben to be a little, what do you want to say? He embellishes a few things that he says, or he gets a little dramatic. Do you think Ben's being a little facetious there in a comment like that? Or is he just really trying to tell everyone that, hey, I feel really good, I'm rested and ready to roll?
Well, I'm hoping that he's not embellishing, because I really don't want to see him in a walking boot and a full body cast and braces on both arms at, you know, mid season. But, you know, they said that after he had the surgery, the team pretty much has said that they thought that he might come back better. And if it's something that was like a structural issue with his arm, and the surgery fixed that, then there's very real possibility that his arm could be better. Now, I can relate a little bit to that. Before my first season playing college softball, I got in a bad bicycle accident, and I'm right-handed, and I hyperextended my elbow and broke part of my it wasn't my elbow, but it was actually part of my forearm from it being hyperextended. And the doctors told me, well, you know, you'll never be able to throw right again. Well, I got on the softball team and they made me an outfielder, and I could actually throw with more control and throw longer distances without any problem after that. So I'm hoping that maybe Ben will be as fortuitous as I was.
Yeah, well, we all do. And, you know, I guess that's just something. There's also like a little I guess it's going to be 4-part Ben Roethlisberger miniseries. They had part one already come out. You know, you could check out some of that. I guess he had film crew follow him around. You know, he's kind of like a private guy, but so that kind of surprised me that he would have a film crew kind of documenting some things and this and that. So we're going to find out more, I guess. And we'll definitely know in about 2.5 weeks whether, you know, he's a stud or a dud. And we're hearing some good and great things about different people in training camp. And that's kind of where I wanted to go with this was, as we know, this upcoming season, there's been some changes regarding the whole COVID-19 thing that's going on, particularly to the structure of not only the way training camp is operated, but also rosters. You know, this is going to affect depth charts. It also affects the practice squad. Now, we got a little snippet. It was from one of the beat writers. I can't remember who. I don't know if I want to credit Jim Wexel or Mark Caboli or who, but it may be multiple that quoted Kevin Colbert and had discussed some changes even to the outlook that I had. I just had done a 53-man roster deal, and I went through some of that structure. Of course, it's a 53-man roster, but with the changes to the practice squad and some of the eligibility, Kevin Colbert basically came out and said they signed safety Curtis Riley and running back Wendell Smallwood because these are veterans that could still be practice squad eligible. And, you know, I don't profess to know every single nook and cranny of the NFL agents, even when we've had them. I know you've interviewed many of them in the past too, Tina, but even myself, you ask them a question, sometimes they say what? We got to get back to you. So I don't profess to know everything, but I'm just taking the direct quote that came, from one of the beat writers. I don't remember if it was Caboli or if it was Jim Wexel, but regardless, it came from Kevin Colbert, and those were the two players that he singled out. And now I'm sitting here and I'm looking, and you know, this can change. This is all subjective, anyways. The Steelers have 89 on the roster, and then if you go to their page here, of course, reserve retired as a special designation for Ryan Shazier. He's not counting against the 80 that are in camp, not 90. So this is the one change that's kind of big and kind of, you know, the bells and whistles were going off. Kyle Markway was a tight end recently signed because, you know, they dropped Dax Raymond. I think he got kind of hurt. Maybe he was like a waived injury designation. I have to go back and look at that transaction. Actually, I have it in front of me if I can, you know, I can never find it. Yeah, waived injured Dax Raymond. That was on just the 22nd, so that was 5 days ago. So he's part of that 80. Now, with 80, I'm starting to think here, you do get two extra players on the game day if you have so many linemen that are already on the active roster, blah, 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 suiting up, actives, inactives, et cetera. Okay. But those two extra players, and they get protected. They don't go to waivers or whatnot. It's the practice squad that really kind of shifts this thing into a whole other gear. You now have 16 players on the practice squad. So you're looking at 53 and 16, and this is a nice number, comes out to a whole 69 players of the 80 that are going to be on this team. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean they won't make some other moves. There's going to be players that are going to be cut, released, maybe even veteran players, guys at the Steelers front office and coaching staff have scouted in the past or had their eyes on in the draft, but they didn't necessarily get them where they would have wanted them or, you know, something like that. You don't necessarily have the same background where Mike Tomlin, they have these preseason games and he's watching the other team's guys, which is how he ended up with, I think, Roosevelt Nix when they played against the Falcons preseason, Alejandro Villanueva against the Eagles. He saw that big guy across the field, you know, and he said, oh, you know what? I think he could be something here. And they watch film on not only their guys, but when they're watching this film, they see what the other teams that they play against are doing too. I don't know how much of an impact that's going to have on shaping the roster. And when you look at some of the veterans that they brought in, some of the XFL players that they brought in, even some of their current moves that have been made, it's pretty clear that, you know, we're only talking about 11 players out of this 80 that are going to be jobless, so to speak. There could be an extra two or three at the bottom half of the roster where okay, and I would suspect this a lot within the AFC North, particularly because they probably know their opponents. That would be Mike Tomlin, Kevin Colbert and company. Probably know like the Browns, Bengals, and Ravens rosters very well from having played them at least twice over the last few seasons. So that's how somebody like Chris Wormley comes over. Usually you don't have interdivisional type trades like that, but it would have to be like a common opponent, maybe somebody like the Chiefs or Patriots that they have like more knowledge and have seen more film, and they feel that maybe somebody that was let go for whatever reason from another team gets added. Mind you, it's still somebody that's going to be on the bottom half of the roster, potentially even the practice squad. So it's really kind of the gist of the programming today is I'm going through, I'm looking at this. If you happen to be in front of a computer or pen and paper or play along here, Steelers.com, their player roster, and how they have everyone listed on positions here. I'm going to go through some of the names that are here, but just some of your initial thoughts here. So I can also catch my breath too, Tina, on just the how that is, because we went from having 10 players on a practice squad in 53, so you have 63. You were going from 90 or 91, because you also had Christian Scotland Williamson in the past, who was the international pathway player program, whatever you want to call it. But he didn't really count, like, you know what I mean? So they were still able to keep him. If he didn't make the team and he wasn't on an actual practice squad, he was still – he just couldn't come on to the main roster. But he was still there to be there for development. But you go from cutting basically or releasing a minimum of 27 players down to 11. That's a huge change for all teams across the NFL and how the Steelers are managing the roster right now.
Yeah, and when we found that out and we're talking about that, it is interesting because the way everything has been this year with no preseason, these guys that they are going to keep on the practice squad are going to be guys that have been practicing with first teamers, second teamers, have gotten a lot of reps, and that makes a huge difference from years past. So if there's one silver lining to the COVID thing, is that they had to adjust the practice squad, and the coaching staff and the scouting staff are going to have a very good idea this year compared to other years of how they shuffle that rotation on the practice squad.
Yeah, and they get to protect four players. So if it was somebody like, let's say, Wendell Smallwood, for example, this is someone that they could have at pretty much a vet minimum type contract on the practice squad. And if there was an injury to somebody else, they could move him up to the active roster. They could even move him up to the active roster without taking him off the practice squad, should they have the eligible number of offensive linemen that meet the criteria to have the two additional players on game day. This is like some interesting kind of mental gymnastics I have to do here with some of this stuff. Now, of course, this morning the Steelers had to throw a wrench into all the nice and neat spreadsheets and things that I had all set up, because they had to sign, they signed a long snapper, Liam McCullough, and Jayron Elliott, who was actually on the active roster as an outside linebacker last season. And he made some waves toward the end of the preseason and won a job and won a spot. So he was around, and actually he was someone that came on. I think there may have been an injury or something. Maybe it was like Anthony Ciccolo or something. And he came on after they had gotten rid of Tuzar Skipper, who I said wouldn't make the main roster. I think he did and then was cut. And it was something like, you know, the guys at the very bottom. It was another one of these things. He ended up with the Giants. He's back in the Steelers camp. And that's kind of – he's the name that this whole topic came up about, because it was like, can he make the team? Can he make the practice squad? Is there room for him? How many linebackers? And then it was like, well, how many players do we have to name that, you know, are at more risk of being released or cut than Tuzar Skipper? And that's how we came up with the number 11 as the minimum number of spots that they would have to clear. And then we started going through some of the names. So as we're doing this, keep in mind, Jayron Elliott actually kind of changes my whole thought perspective on all of this, because here's somebody who's had some experience with the team. I'm not even sure why he wasn't already. I don't know if he was with another roster or not, but they're bringing him back, and he has some experience, and you know, that's still valuable. I know some experience can be bad experience or whatever, but with this whole lack of mini camps and off-season workouts and everything like that, the learning curve, he's a little further ahead than somebody that would just be brought in completely fresh without any knowledge or any experience in the Steelers system. In order to make room on this 80-man roster, they had released linebacker Leo Lewis and wide receiver Anthony Johnson. They were two of my 11 that were most at risk. And I don't want to make it sound like, hey, these guys, you know, a lot of people are going to be like, hey, these guys are bums. Who are they? Never heard of them, anything like that. You know, you have to be you have to be at a certain level of talent in order to be in camp right now. And, you know, it's just a matter of there's so much talent. There's so many guys who end up coming out of the draft. There's always guys that are younger, better, stronger, faster. Some other guys that are still trying to hold on 2-3 years worth of training camps, things of that nature. As part of the business, you're probably looking at what? Anywhere from probably about 45 players beyond 45. Those are the guys that are probably most at risk. There may be some a few exceptions here or there. But, you know, that's pretty safe, and that's because of the way all those other contracts are structured. You don't have everybody on these short-term or veteran minimums or anything where you could just cut everybody either. You know what I mean? So, with all of that said, McCullough was brought in because Cam Kanaday, they probably needed somebody to snap the ball in order to get Chris Boswell and the punters, Corliss Waitman and Jordan Berry, some work. One of those punters, just going right off the top of my head, you're not going to have two punters, okay? That's just not going to happen. So that's going to be one of the 11. I don't know how Waitman has looked. I haven't heard a whole lot or read a whole lot from the pool reporter reports. So let's get to it. I'm just kind of getting a little long-winded. Looking at the top of this, if you're sorting it by position, you have three centers, and J.C. Hassenauer was an Alliance of American Football guy, I believe also on the active roster for a few games at the tail end of last season. John Kinoy was brought in from Western Michigan, not quite a rookie. He has 1 year of playing in or being in NFL camps. There's a name that's at risk there. Of course, Pouncey isn't going to end up going anywhere. So when you're looking at your 11, probably Kinoy. Hassenauer is probably a good target for the practice squad. Then you get into the corners, Tina, and the DBs, too, since the DBs are here. I hate when they designate guys as just DB. Uh-huh. It drives me crazy. Of course, Cam Sutton is somebody that they're saying is playing everywhere. He's versatile. They like their versatility. But you have Joe Hayden, you have Mike Hilton, Justin Lane, Steven Nelson, Cam Sutton. I mean, those are five guys that are probably going to make the roster. They don't have a whole lot of other names or bodies in camp here. So Alexander Myers is a guy that's been floating around. James Pierre is a rookie from Florida Atlantic, 6'2", 185, that has been making some waves. You know, he's a name that's come up. We've heard Mike Tomlin mention varsity versus JV and that type of competition. And then you have Trajan Bandy from Miami of Florida, also a rookie. So, you know, Bandy is maybe one of these guys. Myers and Pierre maybe looked at when it comes to a practice squad type fit. I'm trying to see where I can let you interject here because it's kind of hard not to do this without just, you know. So feel free to just jump in, Tina, whenever you want. Most of this, I think, is pretty cut and dry. I think it's cut and dry there.
As we go through this to this list, as we go through it, that they're going to recognize some of the names. Some of the players are players that either spent time on the practice squad with the Steelers previously, were in camp with the Steelers previously, or maybe even dressed and saw maybe one game with the Steelers. So as we go through this list, if you hear a familiar name, don't be shocked.
No, and it might not be the most familiar name unless you're the geeks like us that pay attention to the guys that are in camp, practice squads, and things of that nature. To casual fans, they probably won't even recognize some of the players on the toward the bottom of the 53. Like even Justin Lane may come as a surprise, even though, you know, he was drafted last year with some folks. So let me see. Defensive ends, defensive tackles. I'm sure they have somebody in here. They're going to throw another wrench with something designated as a DL or a nose tackle. But right now, for all intents and purposes, I think I have like guys like Tyson Alualu, Isaiah Bugs, obviously Stephon Tuitt, Cam Hayward, Dan McCullers. Those are the guys that are in. You've got some on the fence here. A guy that was in camp last year, practice squad, Henry Mondow, defensive end. You got Calvin Taylor, a rookie out of Kentucky. Carlos Davis, the late draft pick from Nebraska. And then you have Kayvon Walker, who led the XFL in sacks. So those are some of the guys that you may not hear a lot about that are going to be vying for one of these 16 spots that are up for grabs. And, of course, there may be some pedigree there. I don't know. Carlos Davis being, what, seventh rounder? Seventh rounder, it's tough to make the roster. And we see this sometimes where maybe he'll be a practice squad type guy, just being a draft pick. Now, a few years ago when the Steelers were reloading or they had spots, they're absolutely overflowing in some areas where, especially on the defensive line, it's going to be very difficult for a seventh rounder to just jump up and necessarily make the roster. So, again, this is a whole business decision, too. If you release Carlos Davis, how many other teams are going to be interested in picking him up? I can't vouch for that, you know, and they may have a lack of homework on him as well in order to just kind of poach him, too, to see who ends up on these practice squads. Derek Watts, the only fullback, so you don't necessarily have to worry about that. By the way, I wanted to mention, even with Liam McCullough being signed as a long snapper right here in Cam Canada's absence, they're only going to keep one long snapper, so one of those spots is going to open based on whichever one of those guys is healthy and ready to go. You know, I don't see them rostering two. So that'll be interesting to see what ends up happening there. Let me see. We got David DeCastro listed as a guard. Obviously Chris Boswell will be here. We got the linebackers, and it's all over the place between the outside linebackers, inside linebackers. You have Ola Edene. I'm not going to say Ola's full name. I always embarrass myself. Devin Bush, Bud Dupree. I just mentioned Jayrone Elliott is someone who kind of like spoils maybe my plans because they don't have the most depth at outside linebacker. In fact, bringing him in when you have Ola and Tuzar Skipper is here as well may signal something where they need to see more competition there. They may need more bodies, more depth, or they're not pleased with the progress or development of some of the other guys. Of course, Alex Highsmith is the rookie that's here. Ulysses Gilbert, inside linebacker. James Lockhart is a rookie out of Baylor. Definitely someone that may be at risk. I think I may even had him on my initial practice squad projection just based on the lack of linebackers I see being on the actual 53. I really only see them keeping eight, which would also include Robert Spillane, Vince Williams, and of course, TJ Watt. So as mentioned, Chris Wormley's here as a nose tackle. Then we get to the offensive line. Some of the offensive linemen here, Kevin Dotson, rookie. I know he's been banged up a little bit. And I'm also keeping in mind nobody's going to injured reserve. That's another thing that I hadn't really speculated on. So just keep this in mind. This is outright making the roster. You could have a situation where someone, they have to be on that 53, and then it's like one of those things where then they get put on the injured reserve, and then you sign somebody to replace them. This is what happened with Bud Dupree just a few years ago when he was hurt throughout training camp in the offseason. Jerron Jones is an XFL guy, 6'6", 320 out of Notre Dame. I see him as a practice squad target. Chuksakorfor, Stefan Wisniewski, Zach Banner. These are all guys that are going to be making the main roster, in my opinion. Matt Filer, Derwin Gray, who was drafted last year, has a shot to make that 53 as well. And they're going to need offensive linemen on that 53 that are eligible in order to get the two extra for that 55 on game day. So keep that in mind, too, as we read off some of the names. Anthony Coyle, Christian DeLauro. That's everybody. And then there's Alejandro Villanueva. So Coyle and DeLauro, we'll see. They're going to need a backup tackle. And I'm guessing here, two or three offensive linemen minimum on the practice squad. I was already talking about Hassenauer as a backup center. They'll probably have Stefan Wisniewski in that BJ Finney role as a backup guard and a backup center to Marquise Pouncey and everyone else that's playing there. And he's a veteran, of course, and has played both throughout his career. But they've always had other guys like Hassenauer or Patrick Morris on their practice squad as far as centers are concerned. And then you get into the punters, Jordan Berry, Corliss Waitman. They'll keep one of those guys. And then it gets interesting, Tina. We were talking about quarterbacks just a little bit earlier. Ben Roethlisberger, we hear a lot of good things about him. We're hearing good things about Mason Rudolph. I'm not hearing a whole lot about Duck Hodges whatsoever. And then some of these beat writers are really incredibly down on Paxton Lynch. And that's kind of, you know, I kind of was almost signaling it's going to be he or Devlin Hodges as the odd man out. But they're only going to keep three of these guys or should all be on the 53. I don't believe that they will save one of those 16 spots on the practice squad for a quarterback. I think the spots are too valuable, particularly if you're going to keep three quarterbacks on the active roster as it is.
Yeah, and actually, I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't bump Paxton Lynch down to practice squad after the initial 53 cuts, just in case.
You know, I was gonna ask you about your thoughts there, because are you insinuating they just part ways with Duck Hodges entirely and then only keep two quarterbacks on the roster?
Oh, I don't know if they'll do that right away. Now, if they decide that they're going to do that, then yeah, then it would be Hodges, I would guess, that would go to the practice squad. But with the uncertainty surrounding Ben, until they actually see him in a game situation, I could see them easily deciding, okay, we're going to keep three, maybe keep Paxton Lynch on the practice squad, see how Ben does the first couple weeks, and then make adjustments.
Well, that would be interesting too, but I wonder too if he's just stinking up the joint so bad that they just say no. And you look how fast JT Barrett got snapped up when they had to go from 90 to 80. There were 10 names. He was one of the ones that just went right away. They have a ton of running backs though, and I have no idea how many of these guys are not only going to make the 53 and or the practice squad. They've got a number of them that have some game day experience. We know James Conner. We know the rookie Anthony McFarland Jr. We know Jalen Samuels. We know Benny Snell. There's four names right there. And, you know, they usually only have three traditional running backs. I'm not including Derek Watt or a fullback in this calculation here. But then there's also Trey Edmonds, who got some carries last year. You got Kareth White, who had some carries last year. And then I had mentioned Wendell Smallwood as well. I could see all of these guys being on the practice squad, come to think of it. And it's going to make a very difficult decision as to what the Steelers do as far as the 11 that they end up parting ways with. I think we're nearly at the bottom of this roster because now I'm into the safeties. We're hearing a lot of good progress on Marcus Allen. I've been saying for a while that it could be a coin flip between he and Jordan Dangerfield. Jordan Dangerfield knows all about the practice squad, and he may still be eligible. Every time I think he's not eligible, he might be. So if he doesn't make the 53... Here's a guy that's very familiar with how, you know, waivers and everything works from week to week, call-ups. He's like the new Ross Ventrone. It's like they have somebody that's always in this safety spot, and it's one of the expendables that are there. But Curtis Riley's been making some noise too, and here's someone that's in his sixth year in the NFL that I think would be I'm not going to say think. This came straight from the horse's mouth with Kevin Colbert. He would be eligible. It's just interesting to see how many DBs they're actually going to keep and how many players, because last year it was four. And then, of course, Sean Davis got hurt. Cam Kelly had some trouble. They went and they made that move to get Minkah Fitzpatrick, who and Terrell Edmonds are definitely locks on here. And you have the rookie, Antoine Brooks. You know, where was he at? Fifth round? Sixth round? Brooks, it will be interesting because he's somebody that they viewed somewhat as a hybrid. Now, we've heard that Marcus Allen, due to the lack of the inside linebackers, has been practicing in that kind of spot too. Steelers like to use what's called a dime backer. It's somebody that they might put on a tight end or a running back that has more DB type of qualities, but is also kind of a tweener with a linebacker as well as a defensive back. So it's going to be interesting to see who ends up with that spot because, you know, Marcus Allen's the incumbent, but we've seen him on the practice squad before as well. And that's before we get to the remainder of the offense, which is the tight ends and the wide receivers. But you can kind of see where this is panning out and where we're trying to figure out, you know, which names are going to make it and which don't. We've said quite a few so far. You get into the tight ends, you know, there's Vance McDonald, Eric Ebron, and we're hearing a lot of positive things about Zach Gentry entering his second year in the league, rookie last year out of Michigan, who didn't start college necessarily playing as a tight end. He hasn't been doing it that long. You know what I mean? So he still was a little green, a little raw. And for a third tight end, somebody that's a developmental type guy that they invested a draft pick in, don't see him going anywhere considering the other names that are on the roster. I'd mentioned Kyle Markway already. And then Kevin Rader, who's, you know, my designated underdog from Youngstown State, who was also on the practice squad last year and is most notably found his role as a blocking tight end as well. You get into the wide receivers too, and we're always asking, are they keeping five? Are they keeping six? Well, we know pretty much five right off the top of our head, provided the injuries aren't serious. We heard Ryan Switzer's been doing positive things. There's a lot of camp buzz, him being in greater shape this year. He could be basically the wide receiver five because you've already got Juju, you've got James Washington, you got Deontay Johnson, and you've got the rookie Chase Claypool. With Switzer, that makes five. So you got to find out where there's room for Deion Kane. You got to find out if there's you know, a little bit of credence to some of the camp hype around someone like Ray McLeod. Amara Darbo was around also at the tail end of last season too. So, you know, this is there's quite a few guys here. And before it used to be Trey Griffey, Ken Griffey Jr.'s son, and Tevin Jones. And Tevin Jones actually got called up, had that one, I think, the big drop in the Bengals game, and then he was, you know, let go shortly thereafter that. But those were guys where the Steelers, even with just 10 spots, usually reserved two for wide receivers. So you're probably going to want to keep an eye on somebody. Deion Kane is probably fighting for a spot, whether they keep five or six wide receivers. You're probably looking at Ray McLeod, Amara Darbo, also there. Anthony Johnson was already released, so there's a name that you can't count on for those 11. I know everybody's going to want us to say straight out who the 11 are, and I think I may have missed. I'm looking to see if we lose somebody else. Oh, I didn't mention John Battle. He was another name. He's a safety out of LSU. So that kind of rounds out all the 80 names, some familiar, some not. I had some of mine that were kind of the go-tos here, but I think the big one out of all of this, we've said a long snapper that isn't going to make it, at least one of these tight ends. I originally was wondering about Wendell Smallwood because I wasn't sure about his, eligibility. But I'm curious, between he, Trey Edmonds, Kareth White, do they keep three running backs out of 16? It seems a little rich, especially if they have four on the 53-man roster.
Yeah, it does. And there's like several positions where I could see them. We were talking about Ryan Switzer. Now I could see Amara Darbo and Ray McLeod coming in while Switzer's figuring out how bad his foot injury is. Whether or not they stay for the long term, probably not, but it's realistic to think that they stack an extra wide receiver on the practice squad. Inside linebacker position is very thin as far as depth. They could be moving some guys around, seeing who can transition from the outside linebacker position, like you said, into a more hybrid role. Who can drop into coverage at the same time stopping the run while they iron that out. As far as like the defensive backs, I could see them keeping a couple defensive backs, whether it's a safety and an extra corner on the practice squad. But as far as the rest of the roster that you've gone over, pretty much, I mean, I think that the 11-man squad will be comprised of positions that either they have low depth among their starters or places where they may have concerns at a position.
Yeah, and just to be clear, the 11 was the cut, so there's 16 that are going to make it. And originally, some of the names that I had here, I mentioned center J.C. Hasenauer. I had a couple of corners. I had Alexander Myers and James Pierre, Henry Mondau, defensive end, Carlos Davis and Kayvon Walker. I now have inserted Jerone Elliott as part of that with the linebackers. James Lockhart is somebody that could be at risk here. I could see it being Elliott and Skipper, possibly. And then Jerron Jones, offensive lineman. So then I have two offensive linemen, two running backs with Trey Edmonds and Kareth White, maybe a third with Wendell Smallwood. I said flip a coin really on maybe Marcus Allen or Jordan Dangerfield, but I guess you got to put Curtis Riley in there. I was kind of just assuming that maybe he would be a shoe-in. We're also assuming that all the rookies pretty much make this team except for the seventh rounder with Carlos Davis. And then wide receivers, I said, hey, you got to have two here. Maybe it is, maybe one of them is Ray McLeod. Maybe it's somebody they find from another roster. Maybe it's Deion Kane. Maybe they keep an extra position somewhere else. Deion Kane's the interesting one because I'm really on his bandwagon, and he's 6'2", 202. He made some big plays last year. But, man, it's a crowded and talented wide receiver room now. There may be a spot, as you said, depending on how serious some of these injuries are with other players. Maybe Kane gets a little bit of time and gets some more time to impress or whatever. But, you know, it's another thing where we're talking about wide receiver 5 and wide receiver 6 here. This is something that, you don't have to agonize over this as a, even a business decision. These are players that aren't impacting your salary cap, and these are players that more than likely you could go and poach just as they got Kane off of someone else's practice squad during the season. So this will be interesting to see. And by the way, there's a lot of smoke around the fire that is Chase Claypool right now. Do you think that's a really ambitious kind of set of expectations? And the reason I say this is you've got Juju Smith-Schuster. It's going to be coming back healthy, looking to rebound with, and already has proven that he can be the guy with Big Ben. You have James Washington and Deontay Johnson, who excelled midway through and through the end of last season and rose to that occasion, even with Mason Rudolph and Doc Hodges playing at quarterback and the ones throwing them passes. There's three wide receivers. I know that the Steelers have been a little shy, with the exception of Juju, really, of just putting rookies out there on the field right away week one. We saw Deontay Johnson kind of ease his way in. He kind of maybe got more playing time last year because of injuries. Also, Dante Moncrief dropping the ball. That didn't do Dante Moncrief any favors. It helped Deontay Johnson get on the field a little sooner. James Washington wasn't out there right away. You go all the way back to Martavis Bryant, or even guys like Emmanuel Sanders or Antonio Brown. They really had to earn their spots. Sammy Coates was in much the same position. And then, of course, he had about five great weeks, got hurt, and that was the last you heard of him. But it seems to be the Steelers are hesitant to put the rookies right out there. Do you think Chase Claypool, based on what everyone's saying about his size, his drive, and his playability, if you believe all the hype, because, again, this is training camp. Sometimes they're, you know, in shorts. So it's tough when you don't see it against real game action. But I'm just wondering, like, I said the same thing about Benny Snell last year, too. I said the only way Benny Snell was really getting on the field was if James Conner got hurt. That turned out to be true. Also turned out to be true that Benny Snell had to get healthy to get on the field himself as well. I don't know. How much do you see Chase Claypool being utilized here? The other thing we glossed over it, but they have two tight ends that are capable of being playmakers with Vance McDonald and Eric Ebron there as well. I just think there's a lot of mouths to feed in the Steelers offense.
Well, there's a ton of mouths to feed, but as far as Claypool, he could ball out completely in training camp, and people don't always think about this, but, you know, when you're a rookie and you get drafted, you're competing also against undrafted rookie free agents, and so there's a drive there to try to make a really good impression so that you can stay on the roster and stay with the team that drafted you. And I'm not saying that he's being overhyped. Like you said, we can't see it in the modified training camp rules. But I wouldn't be surprised if even if he does really well during training camp, if the Steelers don't go conservative with him and give him time to work into the roster before they just throw him into the fire.
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing that's really going to play around a lot with this too is if someone ends up on the COVID list and then they've got to be quarantined, it may open up some spots for some of the players that we were already talking about. But the names that were originally some of the ones on my just so people understand where I'm coming from with the 11, I just don't think there's enough time or enough spots or opportunity versus any of the players who may have had some experience not only with the XFL but a prior Steelers training camp or even on the bottom half of the roster with some of the injuries last year. So John Kinnoy, center, Trajan Bandy, a DB, Kelvin Taylor, defensive end. You could pick and choose when it comes to some of the offensive linemen, but I think Christian DeLauro and Anthony Coyle, we're talking about undrafted players here too, some from smaller schools. Sometimes, hey, it doesn't matter. If you got it, you got it. One of the punters will go. I just think maybe Corliss Waitman may not have enough of an opportunity to unseat Jordan Berry. Whether you like that or not, I still do think that Jordan Berry is on thin ice. You can't have it too many bad or inconsistent games. It'll do well for him to not screw up for about 6 weeks. If he has one flub, then it'll be more forgiven. If it happens in the first 2 weeks, man, I don't know. There may be a bad taste in that mouth, especially if it costs them a game. And this is from someone who thinks Jordan Berry has been one of the better punters the Steelers have had in the last decade, because that position has been just a bugaboo for this team for so long. Let me see. I'd mentioned John Battle, Kyle Markway, Liam McCullough, because they don't need two long snappers. And, of course, the big one for me, Paxton Lynch. I see Duck still being on the roster. If the reports are correct and Paxton just isn't connecting and clicking, why would you go away from the guy who's already been in your system and has some rapport, good or bad, with some of your teammates? I understand they had the slide with the three losses at the end of the year last year, but we're talking about a third quarterback on the roster. So Mason Rudolph being the primary backup, and then you have a healthy Big Ben, none of this should be a major concern. I know everybody wants a Pro Bowl team, all-star teams. We're not hearing a whole lot of good reports coming out of the New England camp either about Stidham or Cam Newton. So it doesn't sound like either of those guys have truly won their job there. So you could have as many guys as you want. Just be happy that you have one that's a franchise quarterback, because he's pretty hard to find as it is. So any closing thoughts, Tina? I know it's a little bit of a different way to look at the roster than usual. We usually don't talk about, hey, these are all the guys that are going to get cut. I'm not necessarily saying they're going to, but I think it was important to shed some light on some of these players. I wish, you know, we had enough time to talk even more about some of them, but unfortunately we wouldn't be able to. And how much can I say about, you know, some of these offensive linemen or even Waitman, the extra punter? There's not a whole lot other to say than, hey, they're a punter, because, you know, we have to go by a lot with the pool reports and the closed practices now. And they're not going to say a whole lot about formations and other things that are going on, just some battles, just this guy did this, and you're just going to get some quotes from some of the other players like TJ Watt and him going up against, you know, Okorafor or Banner and how their progress is competing for that right tackle position. So any closing thoughts, Tina?
Yeah, I was just going to say too, for the listeners, we're going through right now all the positional groups to look at what happened last year and kind of go through and predict a little bit more of who we think will make the roster and who's joined the team and how that might work out. So go to steelcityunderground.com and check out those positional reports. And sometimes it's easier to see it in black and white if you miss a few names in the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes, you know, the longer form of being able to speak, certainly I could speak and, you know, almost never run out of breath. I'm sorry if I get too long-winded sometimes. But versus what you write, and I know some of us, even when Brian writes, some of us can put out 1,500 words and it's just, it could be overwhelming too. But we always have something new every day on the website, and particularly the Throwback Thursday, the thing we should close out with, Bill Nunn. Finally, maybe getting that recognition that's deserved with the Pro Football Hall of Fame, legendary Steelers scout, particularly working with historically black colleges and finding players from that path or that avenue and giving them opportunities in professional football. So he's been a name, and I really wanted Brian to be able to say his piece on this. Brian has been, you know, I know I get on certain bandwagons and things like that, but man, Brian has been advocating for this for so long, as I know many of the other beat writers and any of the fans that do. But if you're not familiar with the name Bill Nunn, please do yourself a favor. Look him up. I believe Steelers.com also covered this news in some great detail, as well as our very own Tina Rivers, who wrote the article about Bill Nunn for our Throwback Thursday feature over at SteelCityUnderground.com. So go visit the website and check that out, as it's a nice, thorough piece of research, as Tina always tends to do here with the website. And, of course, I would call you my right-hand man. I don't know if that's necessarily the most appropriate name, but definitely when we get into, you know, our written formats, a lot of the behind-the-scenes work, I owe a debt of gratitude to Tina here. So be sure to thank her if you happen to be following us on both the website and the podcast. And thank you once again, Tina, for joining me today.
Well, I'm happy to do it. I don't get to come on very often because I'm usually behind the scenes trying to make sure that everyone's grammar is correct. So thanks for having me on.
Yeah, and it's nothing against anybody. It's just, you know, sometimes we get into a habit of writing things the way we say it, and it's not necessarily the correct way of putting it out there. But then again, we're not exactly the grammar Nazis either. We do tend to let people have their, what do you want to say, creative expression, particularly Brian, who, if he's listening, stop double spacing all of your sentences after the periods and punctuation. Man, that's such an old school convention. I know where he got it from because I learned it the same way. And this is kind of a funny way to close out the show with something that's totally unrelated to football, but I had actually learned to type on a typewriter. I'm still old enough to have done that, even though I grew up in a computer era. We learned about correction tape, and I actually saw... was it Whiteout or what was the other one? The other competing brand. I saw one of those for sale with the school supplies, doing some school shopping for my young one. And I said, do people still use that? And then I thought of Brian's double spacing. And I said, yeah, maybe he does. So,
well, and what's funny is Brian and I think the first typewriters we used were the old manual. We didn't even have electric typewriters. Yeah. It was the old, you know, it was the pound it out and then cha-ching, get it to go back kind of thing.
Yeah.
With the little arm. Yeah. So like, you know, your typewriter weighed, you know, 60 pounds and you had to tote that thing around unless you had like a little compact one that fit in a suitcase. But yeah, I haven't seen Whiteout in a long time. And I have to admit, I'm not sad that I haven't had to ever use it in probably the last 40 years.
Well, just to kind of explain the whole reasoning, some people are probably completely lost on this. When you use one of those typewriters, and in high school we had the electric IBM ones, which were, you know, those were nice. My mom had one of the ones where the, you know, the keys would get stuck together if you were typing just too fast or you hit two at the same time, and then you had to unfold them and you had the ribbon and everything in there. But the double spacing was if you misspelled something, then you still had room beyond to correct that sentence and kind of shift it over a little bit. Maybe it was only single spaced if you missed a letter, and you could use the correction tape and everything. Oh, I said the correction tape, not even the white out. There was the correction tape too on top of that. Jeez, we're dating ourselves here and really sounding like a bunch of old curmudgeons all over Brian's double spacing convention that he is still hung up on. I wonder if he does that when he's doing some coding or something like that. Oh, he's cursing me out right now. I could already hear it. You know, if he was if he were on right now, and most people may not realize this too, but even remotely, when we're doing this, I have him on the Zoom. We see each other, and we get some of those reactions that I could see him probably flipping me off in the distance or something like that. So thanks for not doing that. Thanks for not doing that, Tina. You know, it's such a thankless job to have to correct other people's mistakes and then be humble. You know, you don't really go out and just say, hey, you dummy, you did this. Sometimes I do. It depends on who it is. Brian, I'd probably do that too, as I'm doing now, as I publicly shame him. He will now have a fire under his butt to respond. And this is my way of getting him back on the show for next week. So and nothing against you, Tina. It's always great to have you on. So thanks once again. That is Christina Rivers, Managing Editor here at Steel City Underground. My name is Joe Kuzma, and you know, I'm just the overlord and supreme leader, as everyone here must call me. And we encourage everyone out there to please like, comment, subscribe. Also, leave some reviews, and we're heading into the regular season stretch here real soon, and we got some real exciting things coming up for you in the upcoming weeks. So as always, we encourage everyone out there to be safe, be good, and we'll catch you later.
We would like to thank you for listening and remind our listeners to follow us on social media and our website, www.steelcityunderground.com.